Hey, After Buzzers, before we move on to your next topic, we just want to say thanks to our sponsor, Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. Plus, there are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Also, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Plus, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor FM to get started.
Hey everybody, on this episode of AfterBuzz TV Spotlight On, we're getting up close and personal with actor Joni Beauville. Let's do it.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin. Amazing
Grace. Look at that. Yeah. Little Amazing Grace playing us into this episode of AfterBuzz TV Spotlight On, recorded by none other than my guest today. This is the show where we get up close and personal with the people both in front and behind the camera that bring you all that great entertainment. You get to watch at home while you're relaxing on your TV. Relaxing on your couch, watching your TV better. There you go. I'm your host, Frank Moran, and my guest today is not only an actor, but also a voiceover artist as well as a recording artist, as you can hear right now. The daughter of a sharecropper, she got the passion for entertainment at an early age. But before deciding to fully pursue that, she also got herself a degree in business. But now, fully ensconced in Hollywood, you've seen her on a variety of projects, including How to Get Away with Murder, Shameless, How I Met Your Mother, and currently, you can see her as Ida, the assistant to the chief of police on Amazon series Bosch, starring Titus Welliver. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Joni Beauville.
Woohoo!
Oh, well, look
thank
at
you. What,
absolutely. No, thank you for this great music.
You're welcome.
Yes. So now,
pretty rocking, if I must say so.
Oh, absolutely. Now, you've got two albums that you released through your own label, Elmo Records?
Yes.
I'm always curious when people come up with their own names, whether it be a production company or a label or something. Where was the inspiration for Elmo Records?
Elmo was my dad.
Oh, excellent.
Yes, and long before the little guy on Sesame Street. Yeah, so that was the inspiration for it. He was a deacon in the church growing up in the Deep South in Mississippi and always encouraging us to do the right thing and be good. So, yeah, that was just a way to give a little salute to him.
And how did he feel about having a label named after him?
He would be elated.
Yes.
Yeah. He passed away when I was 13.
Oh, my
apologies.
So
he would be. No, yes. that was the kind of the tribute to him.
Well, all right. Now, you are one of 12 siblings.
Mm-hmm.
Small family. So
yeah.
I'm always curious for people in big family situations, what is one of the best things about being having 11 brothers and sisters, and what is one of the worst things having 11 brothers and sisters?
You always know you're going to be on the team for number one, yeah, because your family is a team.
Yeah.
When it comes to going outside to play. One of the worst things is you pretty much, I being on the tail end, I always got the leftovers, hand-me-downs, you know, you got to scrounge for your place. I think that was one of the worst things about having a big family.
Well, for your parents, by the time they have you, since you're the last of the 12, Are they just fully exhausted and like, do whatever you want, it's fine? Or are they like, no, we've got to figure it out. There's no way you're going to pull anything on us now.
The first thing you said, because what happens is a lot of people say when they say, you know, they may say, oh, you're the baby, you must be spoiled. And I say, no, it's actually quite the opposite. Because I'm the baby, my parents were so tired by the time I came along. They were like, do whatever, have your way, just don't bother us. So, yeah, it was just the opposite.
Well, I have to mention, when you have 11 other siblings as well, it's not just the parents raising you as well, but you've also got
exactly,
the older siblings as well.
Exactly. My sisters still think they are mom figures for me. Not a bad thing. I appreciate them very much so to this very day. But yeah, they definitely played a part in helping my mom to run the household, especially after my dad passed when I was 13. So she still had to keep things together, you know? So My sisters, my older siblings, I won't just say my sisters, but my older siblings definitely kicked in and helped. Yeah.
What is the breakdown in terms of brothers and sisters?
Would you believe she's 6 and 6?
Wow. All right.
She couldn't have done any better.
There you go. We have to keep going. We can't stop at an odd number. We have
equal
to keep going.
Opportunity.
That's right. So now, as we're saying, the daughter of a sharecropper.
Yeah.
Where does that transition from then becoming a deacon?
it didn't transition. It happened simultaneously.
Really?
Yeah. So a lot of people, especially younger people, don't even know what that is. So a lot of times people don't mention that. And I think sometimes it's because they don't know. But it's basically, for anyone listening who may not know, is we lived on the land. We didn't own it, but my parents worked the land. And my dad being a deacon was, the way I look at it now, I think was probably an outlet, but working. So come Sunday, you want to just relax and take off the work clothes and put on a nice shirt and tie and a hat. My dad always was sharp. He was a sharp dressed man that I remember, even though it was years ago. I remember him really dressing to the nines on Sunday, and we'd all pile in the back of his black Chevy pickup truck and go to church, and we'd be all dusty by the time we got there because these were dirt, those red dirt roads, mm-hmm. and dust was flying everywhere. So I looked at it, and he sang too. So I have really fond memories of my dad driving us there, and all of us bailing out. And then we were the church choir too because there were so many of us. So really fond memories of those days. But that was something he did, you know, while he worked. So maybe it didn't transition. It was at the same time.
Well, so as all your siblings are growing up, they would then just become members of, were they all members of the choir? Or someone like, I'm not really a singer. I don't really want to get into this.
You know what? It wasn't an option.
Nope. We're all going. Like, we're all singing.
This is what we're doing. And this is where you're going to sing. This is where you're going to stand. So yeah, now that you mention that, I've never really stopped and thought about that. No one, I don't remember any of my siblings saying, no, I'm not going to do it. Because they probably would have been like what we used to call D-tooth.
Yeah. There you go. Yep. Yep.
So yeah, I don't ever remember anybody rejecting. We just kind of fell in line. I mean, I'm not saying we didn't reject at times, but I mean, just in that setting, I don't remember anybody ever rejecting it.
Yeah, it was just part of the process. It was just part of everyday
life. What we did. Yes, exactly.
So how old were you when you first got your opportunity to sing in the choir?
I can remember, 6. And I was Easter, because I don't know if it's like this in your church or any church. I don't even know if you go to church, but but in my little church in Smithdale County, Mississippi, Easter Sunday was like, ooh, this was a big time. So, and we put on these little skits, and all the kids memorized poems or Easter speeches that we called them. And you had to stand in front of the church and say it. And I remember my sister Juanita and I had to sing a duet. And I think I was 6 and she was 8. That's my youngest memory. I probably was trying before then, but I specifically remember us singing on the Easter program at church, and I loved it. I was never one of the kids that your parents were behind you pushing, going, go on out there, you can do it. I was out there just like, ah! So I never had that stage fright thing that a lot of the other kids had. I was just happy to be. I would be asking before Easter came around, like in January, I'd be like, what's my Easter speech going to be? What am I going to say? What am I going to do? So, yeah, but it was fun. I loved it. And thinking back, looking back now, I guess it was all in preparation.
Absolutely.
But little did I know then.
Well, because if you're getting that bug kind of bites you as you're singing on those Sundays, I can imagine that's just one day of the week. When you're back at school or you're growing up, you're like, oh, I'd like to do something else along those lines, you know, the other 5 or 6 other days of the week as well. Was that something that was kind of in your mind at the time?
Actually, at the time, I wanted to be a school teacher. That was the thing I wanted to be. And I think it was because I loved my first grade teacher, Mrs. Jones, so much. I wanted to be her. But as I got older, by college time, I that had changed. But yeah, I used to want to be a teacher. And by the time I got to college, and because my parents weren't educated, I actually remember having to help my mom figure out my Pell Grant application because I could read better than her. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty interesting. Yeah. But one of the things even though they were uneducated, they wanted to see us do better. Like I think most parents, they want to see their kids do better than they did. So I got to college, and I was encouraged to get a safe degree, thus the business degree. So, because everybody was like, get education and be a teacher, or get a business degree because you can use that anywhere. I never dreamed or dreamt, which is the word?
I dreamt.
Dreamt that I could have majored in theater or music or film. It didn't occur to me. So I did the safe thing and I got a business degree, which I don't regret because it's been good for me. And I worked a lot of years in corporate marketing in Silicon Valley. And so that's what I did.
So in terms of your siblings, did many of them also go to college as well?
No, not at all. Actually, really? I had a brother. Out of all my siblings, one brother went 2 years of JC. Another sister went to college, but she stopped and then went back later in life to finish. And then I went through to finish. So I was the one.
Jody did it finally. Yes. So I can imagine graduation day for that. It's got to be exciting.
Oh, though. It was huge. Yes. Yeah. And it was beautiful because throughout the process, a lot of my siblings had helped me along the way, i.e. my brother Clinton, who we call Joe. He let me use his car when he was gone TDY in the military, so I had a car to drive. My sister Doris would send me clothes. She lived in Chicago. My sister Clara would share. She would send me a little money now and then to help me out at school. My sister Juanita, when the car broke down, she would give me rides. So everybody pitched in. It was like a production getting me through college. You know, it was the production. It was a family production. So, yeah, they all were there. And we remain very close ties to this day.
So when you graduate and you decide, all right, I have this degree in business, I'm going to have some opportunities in Silicon Valley. Was it hard to kind of leave home behind? Or since so many of your other siblings had kind of moved to different parts of the country, it was like, I can do it as well.
Yeah, a lot of them had spread out by now since I was the youngest one. It was both. It was kind of bittersweet because I was so ready to see more and get out of Mississippi and do more and see more of the country and the world for that, as far as that goes. But it was also kind of hard leaving because by now my mom's starting to age and she, you know, then she would literally be an empty nester. Mm-hmm. And after all these years with her having so many kids, it was like, is she going to be okay? You know, should I go that far? Because at first I didn't. I still lived in Mississippi, but I lived in Biloxi. So it was like a 2.5-3 hour drive from my hometown. So that felt pretty cool because I could just drive and see her all the time. But when I came to California, it was kind of sad, but it's good. It was all good because it was my time.
I can imagine what it must be like for your mom when finally everybody's out of the house and it's just her. Like, boy, this is what quiet is like. This is how.
I know. Like, she didn't know what to do with herself.
I have time. I can just do whatever I want.
Right.
Oh, this is interesting.
Right. Yeah.
So you end up in Silicon Valley, working for a variety of different tech firms while you're out there?
Yes, exactly. Yep.
So what was it like kind of jumping into the whole kind of tech side of the business?
It was quite interesting, actually. I worked selling computer components for a place called Future Electronics, inside sales. That's how I got my feet wet. And then after almost 2 years there, I did a stint at Apple Computer, and then I switched into human resources, and I did some work there. Then came the beginning stages of the big layoffs at Apple, and I was in one of those waves of layoffs. And then I got a job through someone who used to be at Apple who worked at another company, and they got me on over there, and I was there for a long time, Silicon Graphics, back in the day. And when they were doing the dinosaurs for Jurassic Park.
Oh, cool.
It was a cool place to be back at that time. So that was a lot of fun. It was a lot of learning. I made a lot of lifelong friends there. But it was, you know, Silicon Valley is a grind.
It is.
It's a different kind of grind than here, but it's still a grind. Mm-hmm. So
for you, as you're in that grind up there in Silicon Valley, when does the idea of like, oh, hey, you know, I really love doing this. Maybe this is something I could start pursuing seriously now.
You know what? I did things on the side, like the music. I will always love making music. And so I still sang, and I've always sang at church. I sang a couple of times with cover band and weddings and retreats and things like that to just keep exercising that muscle. But I didn't really take the dive until my husband's job transferred us to Southern California. At that point, I didn't go back to corporate. I made the decision. I just put a stake in the ground and I was done. And I was like, I'm not going to go back. I'm going to do something that I want to do and that I've wanted to do. And so I thought this would be the time to try it. Where am I? I'm unemployed. I'm not one to not work. So what can I do? Where am I? Oh, I'm in LA, entertainment industry. I love this stuff. Long story medium, I took some classes, some workshops. I started to learn more about the art of acting and fine-tuning, because I think we all have an actor in us somewhere. Mm-hmm. It was just a matter of fine-tuning that and taking some classes and learning technicalities behind it. And after one of my classes, we had an agent's night, and they came in to watch us cold read. And they told us, if they like what they see, they'll call you next week. Well, next week came and went, and no one called me. The second week came and went, and no one called me. The third week came, and someone called me. And she wasn't even there. She said, I wasn't there, but someone from my office watched you work, and they thought maybe you had potential, and we'd like to invite you in for a meeting. And that was the Morgan Agency back then. I don't think they exist anymore, but that was my first agent. And that was how I started here in LA.
So for somebody that was kind of raised with the idea of like, hey, play it safe, get yourself a nice safe degree so you have something, you always have a job. Mm-hmm. When you decide to go and take the dive into this, what's the family's reaction? Like, whoa, 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 what happened about the playing it safe, Joni?
Yeah. Do you know my family? That's exactly what happened from some of my siblings. And it's actually not so much just what happened, what are you doing, but are you okay? Did you lose your job? Is there something you need to tell us? You know, and even more so, I was so serious about doing it. After a while, my husband Kirk and I made a conscious decision to right size our home. We had a big house, and I said right size because that's my preference of words versus downsize. We sold a big house on a hill, literally in Woodland Hills, with a guest house and all this space that we didn't need. And we made a conscious decision to right size and pursue this entertainment business. And when I put the for sale sign in the yard, when we put the for sale sign in front of our house, they really thought something was wrong. I was getting calls like, so you're selling your house. Is everything okay? Are you really selling it? Do you need to talk to us about something? And I was like, yeah, I'm really selling it. Have you lost your mind? So, yeah, I did get some of that. I got some of those reactions from my blood.
So as you're coming down here and you've already had another career. And now you're deciding to take the plunge into acting, mm-hmm. focusing on that. I having this sense of experience, kind of maturity, coming having some years under your belt in terms of just working.
Yes.
How did it make the transition to just pursuing the ins and outs and the ups and downs of an acting profession?
Well, I think I can only imagine that it made it easier for me, because my husband always say, we kind of feel like the people who had maybe been a series regular back in the day and had some money saved up. And now, so we had worked. We didn't have series regulars, obviously, because we weren't doing it. But because we worked and had saved money and had invested in, maxed out the 401k and all those good things, we had a little nest egg. So when we decided to take this leap of faith, we didn't have to go out and figure out, how are we going to do this? And where am I going to get a bartending job or a waitress job? Not to knock those are very, you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. I think you know what I'm saying. But I think it gave us that cushion. It gave us the foundation. So I think in that sense, it made it easier for me to make that transition.
Absolutely. Because I feel like, and especially somebody that's coming out here just very young, maybe out of college, right here to LA.
Exactly.
It's the lack of having money and then trying to juggle, I got to work this job to be able to pay if I want to take classes, go on auditions, yes. have a working car. But now coming here with a bit of a nest egg, you can kind of eliminate that stress of like,
yeah.
Oh, how am I going to get that paycheck every single week? And
exactly.
Just focus on what you really want to do.
Exactly. And that's how it's been working for us.
So how do you enjoy the audition process?
You know what? At first I didn't. I used to freak out. But what I've learned over this last decade, I've learned to enjoy it. And part of what I think of and the way I approach auditions now is make it fun, is to have fun. And something else I've learned, that's number one. And something else I've learned along the way is don't go to the audition just expecting to wow them or expecting to get something. Go to the audition expecting to give them something. Give them something that they haven't seen all day in that room. Mm-hmm. Bring it, Joni. You can do it. And that's how they don't faze me now. I mean, I shouldn't say like, bring them on. Yeah, there's nervousness sometimes still. But for the most part, that's the way I look at it. I look at it as, that's my 5 minutes to shine and to try to wow them and give them something they may not have even thought of. So, and I always say, bring the fun. Even when I know someone else is going to an audition and I say, hey, bring the fun, bring the kid. So we say.
I figured that is the struggle for many actors to kind of get to that mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And realize that this is an opportunity for me to have fun in the room. And because there are so many factors
exactly.
outside of what I'm doing in the room that come to deciding who's going to be cast.
Exactly. And we have absolutely no control over what happens there. You may not, and don't take it personally. You may not get the job because you remind the director of his ex-wife, you know, crazier things have happened. So we have absolutely no control and we really can't change something that we have no control over anyway. Right. So I say, have fun.
As you start auditioning, what was the first thing that you booked?
Oh, I remember it. It was a business, like one of those training schools, for lack of a better word, like, oh gosh, it was a massage school. And I was laying on the massage table and I said something like, thanks for taking me in, Sarah. Thanks for squeezing me in your schedule or something like that. And I'm literally on the table and she's massaging me. And then they proceed to talk about, yeah, you too can become a massage therapist. I haven't thought about that in a while.
Not a bad first gig. You get a little massage while you're actually doing your part.
Yes. I remember that. And then I remember people saying, hey, I saw you on the massage table. Wow, I hadn't thought of that in a long time, Frank. But yeah, I remember that.
Those are those ones who, you know, next time you're on like The Tonight Show, they're going to pull out that clip, that commercial, and they're going to roll it on there for you. Like, yeah, thanks
funny.
For fitting me in, Sarah.
That's funny.
So you started doing some commercials. What was the first role that you booked for a television show or a film?
For a television show. Had to be a Hallmark show. And that was an interesting thing, too, because the way I got that gig was the Hallmark crew was out in my neighborhood shooting. They were at the house directly across the street from us. And one of the producers actually came and knocked on our door to ask our permission to sit his tripod on our steps to get a shot from across the street. They needed a wide shot. And we said, sure, okay. And we continued to talk. And my husband, Kirk, being the genius that he is. somehow the guy came on into our place and they were talking. And the producer started looking around and he was like, oh, you know what? There might be a shot we could do in your kitchen. And can we talk about maybe using your house as a location? And we're like, sure, let's talk about that. Again, long story medium, the guy offered us whatever they were paying for location fee. Mm-hmm. And Kirk came up with the idea, hey, instead of paying us a location fee, how about put us in the production? Genius, yeah. Right? He said, yeah, okay, let's do it. And they wrote us in. And that's how I got my SAG card. Tapped hard lead into that production. It was a Hallmark murder. I can't remember what the show was, but it was a Hallmark TV movie.
Very cool.
Yeah.
People love Hallmark and they play that stuff all the time.
Yeah.
It'd be nice.
Exactly.
So for your siblings that have been so concerned, like, what is going on? Are you okay, Joni? When they are able to start seeing you on television, whether it be on a show or in a commercial, what are their reactions?
They're like, you know what? You've always been different. We're not. They really do. They're like, okay, I guess if anybody would have had the guts to go for it, it would have been you. So they're like, okay. We accept it. We live with that. So they're okay now on the other side. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, oh, we knew you were going to. Yeah, we knew you.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And now they're all like, so what are you doing next? As if how hard it is to come by work out here. They're like, oh, yeah, we saw that. Now what's next? I'm thinking, if only you knew how hard it was to get the next job, mm-hmm. you would not be asking me that right now.
I also feel like that is something for people that achieve success after they've already kind of transitioned from another career, is that they just have a more grateful, as opposed to, I just came out here when I was, 18, 20, and everything started coming my way. And then, I'm just entitled to all this, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I am very grateful. I'm extremely grateful for every opportunity I get. And especially, like you mentioned, not coming out here in my 20s, I came out here as a seasoned adult, so that presents a challenge in itself. But as long as you're having fun and enjoying it, I'm enjoying the ride, and I refuse to let my age be a deterrent.
So for you, as you're pursuing all this, when does Elmo Records come into fruition?
That Elmo Records actually came in about... when we were still in Northern California.
Okay.
We hadn't even moved down here yet. That was, I want to say, the late 90s. Because we only moved here in 2002. So, like, 96, 98, Elmo Records was born.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, two albums so far.
Mm-hmm.
Plans for a third?
Right now, the acting has... somewhat taken a front seat, but yeah, we're just recently talking about how we need to take a step back and do some more music. I mean, literally this past week we had that conversation, and so it's funny that you would ask that.
So for you, as somebody that enjoys singing and always, even when you were just doing Silicon Valley, wanted to keep your the muscles kind of strong, are you singing at church right now? Are you doing just some kind of fun things just keep it going while you're also pursuing acting?
Yeah. Yeah, I am. I'm singing at church. I also have managed to work it into this business where I told my agent that I'm a singer. And you see those commercials where you see the gospel choir in the background behind the Chevy van or wherever where they just pop up in these commercials. Mm-hmm. So I said, I need to be in those. So I pulled together a group of people I pretty much created a choir that auditions for commercials or TV and film.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so when those requests come through, I get called now. So I do that. I said the van because we did a commercial for, I think it was, I don't know, Mercury, what I forgot what it, Chrysler minivan commercial. We sang in that. We've sang background with some groups. The choir that I pulled together. We've booked a few gigs together, and I do still sing at church. I sing at church a lot, and I'm open to you know, I've done some studio stuff. So when I get the opportunity, so I love it.
But I can imagine singing in a church here Easter Sunday is probably not as crazy as it used to be back in Mississippi.
Right.
You're not trying to get like, come on, guys, let's do some skits.
No. Right, exactly. They're like, what?
So on your Twitter, what I want to ask you, because you had a description of yourself, which I really like,
okay,
is that you said you're a bargain shopper.
Yes.
But then you also that you enjoy having conversations with people who have an interesting look.
Yes.
Yes. So what qualifies as an interesting look to you?
I think that's why I'm enjoying my conversation so much with you right now.
All right. There we go. Yes, I got it. All right.
You know what? I guess I don't even know if that's accurate to say an interesting look, because all looks are interesting when you stop and think about it. But I think not based so much on a physical look, like what the person looks, but what that person evades, like what comes from that person, like what kind of feeling I get from that person, or what, you know what I mean? What you're putting out,
mm-hmm.
What kind of vibe, I guess, for lack of a better word, I'm getting from a person. And I just love connecting with people. I love talking to people. I love stories. I love hearing other people's stories. And I think when I said this in another interview recently, when we walk next to somebody in Costco or Burger King or Walmart, there goes a story past you.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know that story, but everybody has a story. And so every time I get an opportunity to share and hear someone else's story, I just love that. I love just today walking out of a restaurant, a guy walks in with the John Deere hat. And I said, John Deere, I grew up on a farm. I've yep. driven a John Deere tractor. I have my own John Deere hat. So the guy walks out and I said, John Deere, which one do you have? A lawnmower.
That was it?
I literally had that conversation minutes before I got here today. So that's the kind of thing I mean. I'm always striking up conversations with people. My poor husband was like, oh my God, what's she going to say this time?
Honey, we got to go. We got to go. Really, we got to go. Please, please.
So yeah, I guess everything's interesting to me.
So now you've worked on a variety of different shows, including How to Get Away with Murder.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've got Viola Davis on there. So was she somebody that you kind of looked up to in terms of her talent and her range as you were pursuing your first endeavors here in Hollywood?
Yes, definitely. Viola definitely had my eye. And knowing her as a person, personally, was even sweeter. And she's just, I think she's everything. She's like, people say that this is everything. Viola's everything. Everybody knows what a great actor she is, but I think she's even a greater person. Just grounded, rooted, real. And I love her for that. But to be able to see her and all of her success and somebody that looks like me, like really kind of like me. I love that. I love being able to see a dark-skinned black woman doing her thing, you know, in a major way.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Well, and then also just seeing how somebody like that conducts themselves and because they're the who everybody looks to in terms of being the leader on a set. And
yes.
if they're how they're conducting themselves is going to kind of ripple down along the way.
Yes.
So it's got to be nice to see somebody like that that can like, wow, is humble, grateful. That's a great way if I were in that position to want to run a set like that.
Yes, exactly. So I love her.
Now, do you get a little starstruck, or are you able to kind of play it cool? If you're seeing Viola, you're like,
you know, I'm like, be still, my heart. I'm not going to lie. Yeah, it was a little shaky. It was one of those times I can say, yeah, the nerves were a little like, but again, knowing, just seeing her for who she is and her helping everyone around her to just be at ease.
Mm-hmm.
Was so good. It was, you know, I couldn't have asked for. And she even, at the end of my job there, she was like, you did so good. And I was like, really? So, yeah, she just makes everybody feel comfortable. And I had that same feeling when I worked with Will Smith on Concussion, because he was the same way as far as making everyone around him just feel comfortable. He was cracking jokes. He was laughing. He was doing dance moves, you know, and even though the crew had told people, you know, don't look at him, don't touch him, don't dare ask him for an autograph and things like that. But he just broke that wall down. He was on breaks. He would be in the room with all the background actors, talking to them and taking pictures. And so, yeah, he even took my phone and we did selfies together. So I felt the same way with him.
That's awesome. Well, I mean, those can be really long days on set. So it is really nice that they can kind of make everybody feel at ease. Like, we're going to be here for a long time. Let's enjoy ourselves.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's you've good. Also had a chance to be on The Young and the Restless. So I'm always impressed by soap opera, people who act in soap operas, because there is just a tremendous amount of material that you've got to churn out in such a quick pace. For you, what did you think in terms of the pace of shooting a soap opera, as opposed to if you're getting to do like Concussion with Will Smith? It's a little bit of a slower deal.
Yeah, it was, you're right. It's like shooting a little movie a day. And the one thing I remembered about the soap opera set is it's kind of, you don't get a lot of direction or rehearsal time or things like that. It's like, okay, we're moving on. Joni, you're going to enter here. You're going to be in this hospital room and you're going to be there. Okay, action. So it was a learning experience for me. Fun, and I'm grateful for every experience that I've had and continue to have. But it was different, yeah, in that it's a lot more fast paced, a lot more ground to cover in a lot less time.
Now, of course, one of the experiences you're having right now is we've got Bosch on Amazon.
So yay!
Yes, playing Ida, the assistant to the chief of police. What's it been able to be like to have a role that's continuing for season after season?
It's been sweet.
Yes.
Frank.
Yeah,
it's been good. Yeah. It's been really good. And it's good to just be in a spot where you feel like I'm going to be coming back to this again. Like, I know I have a spot. Like, I have a space reserved for me. You know, it's not like, okay, I'm done, on to the next thing. It's good. And it's good when the crew and the cast are great, and when you come back and they're like, oh, hey, welcome back. Good to see you again. You know, it's a great feeling. I love it. And I'm really grateful for that job. I love the cast and the crew. I love Lance Reddick, who's playing my boss on there. He's Mr. Smooth.
Of course.
You know, so, yeah.
Well, certainly for actors who are kind of leading a very kind of freelance kind of lifestyle, they're bouncing around from gig to gig, to have something that you can kind of bank on and kind of hold on to. It's like, all right, I have at least some sense of stableness.
Exactly. Here. Yeah. So it's a good thing.
So now coming back for another season here for that, are you, everything's shot already for this upcoming season?
I have one more episode. I'm actually waiting for the call any day now to say when I am going to work. So I'm waiting for that call if you're listening.
Well, and the nice thing about a show that has gone on for as many seasons as Bosch has.
We started season 5.
Yeah. Which is that when you get to see characters like Ida, you get a chance to get more involved with Ida. So it's not like it's just a one and done for the week.
Exactly.
It's like, no, we've spent almost coming into now our 5th season.
Yes.
Many more opportunities to kind of get to know more about who Ida is.
And I love that. I love that feeling of what could be in store for Ida, you know, maybe next season.
Well, do you feel that the it's a lot of the writers also seeing what you're bringing to the role and kind of like, oh, all right, let's start incorporating a little bit more of this into Ida? Or they've just kind of been giving you these gifts?
So far it's been gifts, but I don't know. Maybe they'll be bigger gifts. I don't know.
We need to go to a church. And I didn't need to sing.
Yeah, that would be so fun. And maybe the chief could visit my church. And hey, let's just write an episode.
All right, here we go. All right, open. All right, I'm going to start writing right here on this. Start dictating. Very nice.
Yeah, but we'll wait and see. But I'm grateful for the gifts that I've received.
So, one other gift you received lately is I saw on your Instagram. So check her out on Instagram. On the set of NCIS Los Angeles with none other than LL Cool J.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that. No, just LL Cool J. We're just hanging out.
Yes. We hung out a little bit.
Well, and I saw that your post was a bit of serendipity for you because you said that you were there for a party and then, boom, a couple of days later, there you were auditioning for everything.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, that was fun. I had, I'm not sure what you're talking about the party.
Oh wait. I may have been speaking at NCIS Los Angeles, but another role where you're talking about. This Is Us. I'm sorry. It was This Is Us.
I don't know what that is either.
Oh, really?
I mean, okay. Cut that part.
All right. Cut.
but I auditioned for it, just straight audition. And we had a good time. We hung out. It hasn't aired yet, so I don't know if I have liberty to talk about it. But it was fun.
Yeah.
But it was fun. I got to meet the cast and crew. They were all fun when we did the table read at Paramount. And I've never had so many women hit me up on social media going, "Hey, what are you doing with my future husband? Or what are you doing with my imaginary husband? Did you really meet LL Cool J?" And he, another humble human being, LL Cool J, he was really cool. And then all of the cast members were pretty cool.
Well, certainly LL Cool J, much like yourself, gets it comes in through the singing and then explores the acting.
Yes.
Do you go like, "LL, you know, I know exactly what you're talking about. I'm a singer as well, and now I'm acting."
Yeah.
Let's do a duet.
Hey, maybe we could do something on Elmo Records.
Yes.
Dang it, I didn't ask him that, Frank.
Charlie. Well, all right. It's not too late to reach out to him.
Yeah,
come on into the recording booth. We'll put something together.
You just gave me a good idea.
All right. That's a great reason. When the episode airs, it's a great reason to reach back out.
Yeah.
I'll see you in the recording booth, LL. Let's
definitely
do it.
Bring him in here to ABTV.
Oh, yeah. Oh, all right. We'll record it right here live. It'll be great. It'll be fantastic.
How cool would that be?
You wouldn't hear me complain whatsoever. All right, Charles, please make this happen.
All right.
Charles is on it. All right. That means it's a done deal then.
Good.
Charles is connected. Absolutely.
Yep. Charles is the man.
So for now, looking through your Instagram, a lot of what I do like about it is it's very, very positive and it's very much inspirational for people.
Oh, yeah.
So in this world of social media, I mean, people have a variety of different things that they like to do. But for you, is just making sure that you're extolling a sense of positivity important to you?
Yes. And I'm so glad you picked up on that, because that's all I want to do. That's exactly what I intend to do with my social media platforms. Because I'm not great at social media as far as being timely and doing it repeatedly enough, I guess, to make that oomph, that impact that a lot of people have. I'm working on it.
Mm-hmm.
But when I do it, I want it to be something worthwhile. I want it to be something positive. I want it to be something uplifting. And not, we have enough drudgery already in everyday life. Don't you think?
Absolutely.
So I just want it to be, I want to just be a positive light for people in people's lives. And so that's mainly what I do with my social media accounts.
Now, compare that back to your siblings. Mm-hmm. In terms of that, are you a positive light in their lives? Or they're like, "Oh, Joni, please. Things are positive."
I guess some of both. It's a mixed bag. Some are like with it, yeah. And some of them are like, "Oh, enough already." But yeah, I definitely get mixed feelings from my family with that. Yeah.
So when you do book a role, what's the, in terms you want to let your family know, who do you have, the point person that you kind of rely on them to spread to the rest of the family? Or do you try to tell everybody yourself?
You know, I don't usually tell everybody myself. That's for sure. I usually... This sounds kind of bad, but I'm trying to keep it positive.
It's positive.
So usually
it's going to be positive.
My husband motivates me to share. And I'll usually, we have this little family hangouts, Google Hangouts chat.
Nice.
So we have a little chat and I'll put something there so I can get a handful of people the word at one time. Or I'll throw something up on social media and one person will see it. And then they'll spread the word. But I never just tell everybody at the same time.
Yeah.
So, and sometimes, you know, it's funny because sometimes I haven't told anybody and I just said, I just want to see what they say when they see it. I just want them to be surprised. Mm-hmm. So I've done that too.
It's got to be a great reaction when they come back. Didn't tell us. Why didn't you tell us you were doing this?
Exactly.
Oh, well, look who's doing cool stuff out here. So now waiting for the last the last episode of Bosch. Mm-hmm. But what else do you have coming up as well that you want to kind of get a plug in now? Besides this really cool episode of NCIS Los Angeles coming out this season on CBS.
I am on a veil for a car commercial.
Nice.
That I'm going to book.
Absolutely.
I am so over the top optimistic about that. I'm going to book that. And then I'm writing. I started a book and I need to put a deadline to it. But I'm writing a book that I'm going to put it out there. You heard it first right here on ABTV.
I love it.
I'm going to finish it by next year.
Awesome.
And so that should be fun. That should be interesting. There's nothing new under the sun, right? But I started to write it for the younger people in my family to just talk about family history and Mississippi and the South because they don't really know that part of our family history. So I started putting down stories. And then I thought, this could be helpful for people outside my family. And then it became, in my spirit of the inspirational self that I am, I started to think this could be good for maybe outside my family. So now it's snippets of it's this personal narrative sprinkled with inspiration, put it that way.
Nice.
Yeah.
When it comes to writing, which is easier for you to write? Is it easier to write music or easier to write prose?
Prose.
Really?
Yes.
What makes, as much as you love music, what makes it more challenging to write?
I don't know. I just, when I'm writing prose, it just flows. Mm-hmm. Prose flows. Prose flows.
Get out of here. See, look at this. You're saying she doesn't, she can't write some music right here. She's just doing this right
now. I think that's it. I think it just flows better for me. Music feels more of a struggle for me. I don't know why. But now, if you put the shoe on another foot, if someone else has written it and they just want me to sing it, then I'm good with that.
Yeah.
But as far as me creating the music, it doesn't come as easy for me.
That's why you have to have an incredible collaborator like Kirk.
There you go. Thank you. Yes.
So when it does come down to the collaboration, you're bringing, of course, the amazing voice. Mm-hmm. And are you collaborating with Kirk on these projects as well for Elmo Records?
Yes.
And so exactly. What does Kirk bring?
Kirk brings writer, excellent writer, by the way. He also plays guitar. So he sings.
Oh, nice.
So he writes, plays, and he has good business head on his shoulders. So he brings that part too, which is key.
What you want in a collaborator.
Yes.
Everybody's got you're shoring up each other's weaknesses.
Yes.
And then making a fantastic final package at
exactly.
The end of it.
Yeah.
Joni, it has been a delight talking to you. I'm glad that I've made it to at least somewhat of an interesting person for you to want to spend
absolutely.
A little time with.
Absolutely. Oh, thank you.
Please. All right. Now, Joni, if they want to keep in touch with everything that you're doing, other than getting into the family Google Hangout.
Yeah.
don't give them that information.
Right.
But where can they follow you on social media to get a nice dose of positivity, as well as keeping up to date with what you're working on?
Okay. Joni Beauville, my name, JoniBov as in victory, ILL. That is Instagram. At Joyful Joni on Twitter, and of course, Facebook, my name.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, my guest has been Joni Beauville. Make sure you check it out. And all your music, is that on iTunes as well?
Oh, yeah. You can get it on iTunes, CD Baby, and Amazon. You can even download. You can 99 cents a song.
Look at that. Do it.
So easy.
Yes, absolutely. You heard it at the beginning of this. Yeah, have that on your iPad or your phone
or whatever.
Yes, be able to listen to that great music.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, I've been your host, Frank Moran. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at HappyGoJackie. We'll be back here next time to talk to another guest right here on AfterBuzz TV for another episode of AfterBuzz TV Spotlight On. Till then, take care.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.